Thank you, Tracy. Good morning, everyone. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa that began in early 2014 is the largest Ebola outbreak in history. In October 2014, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced that Maryland, along with five other states, will begin monitoring return travelers from Ebola-affected countries in West Africa. These countries included Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea, and later on to include Mali. Monitoring of individuals potentially exposed to Ebola includes active monitoring, in which the state or local public health authority establishes communication with the monitoree at least once a day for 21 days. The monitoree should report measured symptoms, or measured temperatures, any symptoms of Ebola virus disease, and travel plans during their monitoring period. Direct active monitoring requires visual observation of the monitoree at least once daily in addition to the active monitoring requirements. Maryland is unique for a few reasons. First, there is a large West African diaspora concentrated in certain parts of the state. Second, our proximity to Washington, D.C. means that there are several federal agencies and non-governmental organizations involved in the Ebola response in West Africa. And third, the National Institutes of Health is home to a biocontainment unit, and NIH healthcare workers caring for a patient with Ebola virus disease would also require monitoring. This map shows the West African population in Maryland based on data from the American Community Survey. The West African countries represented here are Cape Verde, Ghana, Liberia, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone. It does not include Guinea or Mali, but this still gives us a good idea of where the West African immigrants reside in Maryland. Prince George's and Montgomery counties, which is outside of DC, have the highest concentration of West African immigrants, as shown in the darker purple colors. In Maryland, we have 24 jurisdictions, each with its own local health department. The local health departments provide public health services to their residents. The state health department, which I will refer to as DHMH for the rest of this presentation, coordinates multi-jurisdictional activities and is a resource for the local health departments. In order to protect the resources of local health departments and for ease of coordination, we decided to implement a monitoring program that was centralized at the state health department. We established a call center that began operations 5 days after the CDC announcement. It was initially staffed by DHMH employees, but later on we moved to a temporary staffing agency. We had to quickly develop call scripts and processes for the initial phone contact, daily phone calls, the collection of travel plans during the monitoring period, and what to do in the case of a symptomatic monitoree. The call center monitors those in the low but not zero risk category. Monitorees in the some and high risk categories sign voluntary monitoring agreements in which they agree to certain restrictions. We also prepared isolation and quarantine orders, but we have not had to use these orders to date. While the active monitoring response is centralized at the state level, the local health departments are still very much involved. Local health departments must have awareness of all monitorees in their jurisdiction, and they conduct home visits for monitorees that the call center is unable to contact. Local health departments have also conducted direct active monitoring of their residents, whether it's in person or through a program such as Skype. In the case of a symptomatic monitoree, DHMH will coordinate with the local health department, the hospital, and EMS to arrange for evaluation. We also worked closely with the NIH Occupational Medicine Service to monitor NIH employees returning from West Africa and healthcare workers caring for patients being treated for Ebola virus disease at NIH. The U.S. Public Health Service, or PHS, has had four cohorts travel to Liberia supporting the Monrovia Medical Unit. We worked with their services access team to monitor these cohorts upon their return to the U.S. Through the coordination with local health departments and other partners, and with the high volume of phone calls made by our call center, we quickly realized that managing our data in Excel was inefficient. Our in-house IT team developed a .NET web application to streamline data management, and this database was deployed on December 11th. Local health departments and other partners are able to log into the database and view monitorees in their jurisdiction. Because of our high volume of monitorees, we wanted to explore other options for active monitoring. We worked with a company called Emoca to develop an application that allows users to submit their information using a compatible mobile phone. The Ebola Symptoms Monitoring, or ESM, application is compliant with all privacy and confidentiality regulations. And we began offering the option of using the ESM phone application in February 2014. And now I'd like to talk more about the demographics and volume of monitorees in Maryland. From October 2014 to June 9, 2015, there were over 2,800 instances of monitoring, the vast majority of which were low but not zero risk. 102 were some risk and 3 were high risk. These 2,831 monitoring instances included 2,590 unique individuals whose median age was 43 years. We had 51 clinical consults, 7 Ebola virus tests, none of which were positive. Moving forward, the analyses will be presented in monitoring instances. This graph shows that the vast majority of people were monitored once. However, we did have 134 individuals monitored twice and 36 individuals monitored between 3 and 8 times. The majority of these repeated monitoring instances were travelers making multiple trips to and from West Africa. For those instances with known passport country, 52% were U.S. citizens. 42% were West African citizens from Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea, or Mali. Among the travelers we monitored, almost half visited Liberia and about a third visited Sierra Leone. 2% of monitorees visited more than one Ebola-affected country during the same trip. The call center monitored nearly 3/4 of monitoring instances. 9% were monitored by the Public Health Service and 6% by NIH. The Emoca ESM phone application was used in 6% of all monitoring instances, though the app was deployed about 4 months after the monitoring program started. And once we began offering the app to monitorees, about 10 to 15% of monitoring instances use the app at any time. 2% of the monitoring instances required closer follow-up or direct active monitoring and were monitored by the infectious disease team at DHMH or local health department. This graph shows the total number of monitoring instances each day in Maryland. The number of monitoring instances ranges from about 80 to 280 on any given day, and we saw fluctuations around major holidays such as Christmas and Easter. We also saw a peak in the number of monitorees each time a PHS cohort returned from Liberia, and each cohort had about 60 individuals. A patient with Ebola virus disease arrived at NIH in mid-March, and NIH began monitoring the healthcare workers caring for this patient, which also contributed to this big increase that we see during the month of March. We also worked with our GIS analyst to do some mapping of our monitoring instances. This is a map of all monitoring instances in Maryland by zip code. There's a high concentration of monitorees in the DC metro area, as shown in the orange and red colors. And the distribution of monitorees throughout the state is not too surprising because, if you remember, the distribution of West African immigrants in Maryland is also concentrated in the DC area. The NIH is also in the Montgomery County area, right outside of DC, and as well as the base of operations for the Public Health Service. I'd like to highlight some of the functions of our database that was developed by our in-house IT team. We are able to search for monitorees by various fields that include name, risk category, and DGMQ ID. We also worked with the database developers to create a set of reports that we used internally for data management, but these reports also helped us in generating weekly reports for external partners like CDC. So now I'd like to talk more about our ESM phone application. We used images provided in the CDC Care Kit to develop a quick and easy to use application. When the user logs in, the app will ask for the most recent temperature, it goes through a list of symptoms, and it will also ask about travel plans during the monitoring period. As administrators, we can log into a website that allows us to review data for all app users. And by clicking on the details button for any user, which is shown in blue on the right, we can review each user's submissions, including alerts, like the travel alert highlighted in the top right in red. So users submit temperatures, symptom information, and travel information twice a day, once before noon and once before midnight. If a user forgets to submit, the system will send a text message reminder to their cell phone. Administrators receive daily emails with a list of users reporting travel plans and a list of users who missed a submission. DHMH will then follow up with these individuals to get more details on travel or remind them to submit their temperatures using the app. If a user reports a symptom, administrators receive a text message on their phone and an email alert, and that happens almost instantaneously. As of June 9th, the ESM app was used in 171 monitoring instances. We had a handful of individuals that traveled to West Africa more than once, and each time they returned, they did choose to use our ESM app. 77% of app users were U.S. citizens, and 18% were West African citizens. We hypothesized that perhaps younger monitorees would gravitate towards using the application, but the mean age of ESM users was very similar to the mean age of call center monitorees. The youngest app user was 5 years old, but that was actually a parent or guardian entering temperatures on the child's behalf. In general, the phone app was received very well. Many told us it was simple to use and that it was convenient to submit their information on their own time as opposed to getting a call at a set time each day. So why didn't everyone use the Emoka ESM app then? Well, not everyone has a compatible smartphone, and some were just uncomfortable with the technology. Others preferred the daily human interactions with our call center staff or thought it was a hassle to log into the app twice a day and type in their information and symptoms that way. So in summary, Maryland has had a high volume of monitorees. These have included not only travelers, but government responders and NIH healthcare workers. We were able to accomplish the task of establishing a monitoring system in a short time because we were able to build on existing infrastructure and resources. Through the development and implementation of our monitoring program, we learned that we can rapidly meet public health needs, but that this depended on effective communication across all levels of government and with our partners. We also realized the importance of being flexible in order to address problems that arise, to accommodate changes in guidance, and to adapt to the evolving situation in West Africa. This was a huge team effort, so I'd like to thank all my co-authors and all those involved in the response from DHMH, CDC, NIH, PHS, and EMOCA. And I will leave you with this picture of some of us from the DHMH monitoring team, and our t-shirts say, "Don't direct active monitor me, I'm low but not zero risk."